Hey Dave, I'm recording this in Audacity because, frankly, I want to use a new microphone. It's a Samson, Samson. It replaces the Apogee mic, MIC mic, which I've carried around with me for years and like, but basically it fell apart. This Samson is also a third the price, or maybe even less, of what the Audacity one is, but I want to give it a try. So I'm looking at Audacity right now and looking at wave forms that tell me that maybe it's actually recording, so that's a good thing. So this is my, oh my God, third, fourth, fifth attempt today, and it's already now 5:30 and I'm really tired. This is not good. I'm much better in the morning. And I recorded a good one, I thought, this morning, and it didn't take on voice recorder on my iPhone. So I'm going to do this, and we'll see if it works. And I want to hold to a couple of topics. One is headlines, and the other is journalism and stories. On headlines, I'm really haunted by what you said about headlines subtracting value, or I think the word you used was stronger. You said destroying value. And I think that's true. I think the idea behind headlines, of course, is to create value, to create a flag that tells you something about what's in the piece, to compress the story to the headline or the subject of the piece to a headline. There's something I read 1,000 years ago that said brevity can never, in the nature of things, do justice to a complex situation. And I sometimes it helps. I mean, if you're in a there's a fire going on, you don't need to explain. You just yell fire and tell everybody to get the hell out. In a way, that's a headline. You can skip the explanation. But for many other things, especially blogging the way you imagined it in the first place, which I think basically informed tweeting, without blogging the way you imagined it, which was it's not essays, it's the voice of a person saying things, writing things. You don't declare a headline and then start telling somebody something. You just go into it. And that's a way of writing that we didn't have before that, and that your tools supported. And the tweeting supports. There's no headlines in Twitter. That's kind of cool. Actually, I don't know if there aren't in Facebook either. That's a grace. That's not a problem necessarily. WordPress is better for essays, and I use WordPress mostly to write essays, and that's really because of the way the tool works. It's like going fishing with a fly versus going fishing with a lure or some other thing. It's a different tool. And or a hammer rather than a sledgehammer, or a screwdriver rather than a hammer. Anyway, but something I wanted to bring up, and I just invite readers to look at it from the perspective of headlines destroying value. In large newspapers, there are headline writers. My first job, actually, at a newspaper, which is my first job in journalism, period. Maybe I think it was like 22, maybe 23, was to write headlines. And somebody would give me a galley of a story that could be 3 inches long, or 25 or 30 inches long, and go up and down many columns once it would run in the paper. And there would be a layout that said it went across 1, 2, 3, or 4 or 5. We had five columns, as I recall. So if it goes all the way across the top, it'd be in 60-point type. And I had a certain size that would fit in there, and I knew what that size was in that typeface. And I knew if it broke, I couldn't have a hyphen. Stuff like that. But the headline had to bring in the reader, but it also had to accurately reflect what was under it. I know if you for Rita listeners, for listeners who are following the Larry Lessig versus the New York Times story, or many stories, it's about headlines. Larry feels wronged by a headline or headlines that the New York Times would not change. I'm not going to go into what Larry's case is or what the New York Times defense is. I just want people to consider what happened and what does happen with headlines that they can misrepresent. I mean, the Onion just makes a killing at this. The headline is the whole story. And I have to admit, I think of Onion headlines all the time. And my favorite is American Dream Ends When Nation Wakes Up. And then that's a perfect Onion headline, right? And then you could put anything you want under that, but all Onion stories are actually amplifications of the headline. That headline is a very different kind of headline than what usually gets written in a paper. My favorite, I have several favorite Onion actual headlines. That other one was mine that I made up, but one of the actual headlines is, what was it? Oh, anti-spam legislation opposed by powerful penis enlargement lobby. And that story is going to amplify that. And of course, the representative from the penis enlargement lobby spoke only in uppercase type and said things like, "This legislation will cut 3 inches off America's dicks." Anyway, another was woman stalked across 8 websites by obsessed shoe advertisement, which could not be a better indictment of ad tech, of tracking-based ad tech, where people are being followed everywhere, which I've devoted probably too much of my life to fighting. And there are others like that anyway, but those are kinds of headlines that are fun. But what generally happens is that headlines sensationalize. I guarantee whatever, let's see, it's approaching 6 o'clock, whatever Rachel Maddow or whoever's up against her on CNN and Fox News are going to have some big thing that says breaking news, blah blah blah. This is, they're, of course, she's going to have the second part of her Lev Parnas interview tonight, which will date this if you listen to it in the future. And I'm not going to go into the politics of that either, but it is compelling stuff. And the pull quotes that she'll use, the headline she'll use to draw people into it, will be to some extent not just a compression of what will be in that interview, but inevitably a misrepresentation of it. And that's a good thing in some cases, I suppose, but it's also a bad thing in some other cases. And I just want listeners to this oddcast. I'm calling it an oddcast because Dave is even and I'm odd. And we alternate. To just consider what headlines do, to think a little bit about what the role of headlines are and the purposes of headlines. There are many different ones, but they are not always to add value. And so that's one thing. The other thing is that all headlines in most newspaper things, but pretty much everywhere that where the term headline is used, it's to flag a story. And all stories, I learned when I was still just writing headlines at age 20, whatever it was, all stories have only three parts, or it's not a story. It's not going in the paper. It's not going online. It's not going up. It's not going to be interesting unless it has these three elements. The first is character, a protagonist, something or somebody you need to be interested in, that it doesn't matter whether you love or hate them, or it just matters that they're interesting at some level. They're a character. They're a protagonist. There could be more than one also. You can have two of them against each other. The second is a conflict or a problem that affects the character, or that the character is caused. Doesn't matter. There's a problem, and that's what keeps you turning the page. That's what keeps you tuned in. That's what keeps you coming back and interested. And the third is movement, and that's movement generally toward a resolution, but doesn't always have to arrive. Soap operas never do arrive at a conclusion or a resolution, but you have the sense that this can be resolved. It is going toward something. There's a drive forward, and you're interested in the character that way. And there are two problems with this. One is it has never been able fully to represent the entirety of a situation, the entirety of you know, the complexity of what actually happens in the world. A lot of what happens in the world is not a story. Most of it, in fact, is not a story. Most of it is stuff that happens, stuff that's going on. And to reduce it to a story is to trivialize it, no matter how well you tell the story, no matter how deep it is. It is tendentious. It moves you in a direction that may not be the most honest and truthful one. Or if it's artfully done, perfectly artfully done, it could do a better job than just telling the facts. That's another aspect of stories. My favorite priest, a guy named Sean O'Lara, once said there are, and he's Irish, so he does it in a brogue that I won't imitate, but it's brilliant. Brilliant, as he says. Not about him, but about something else. He's very modest. But he said that there are some truths so deep that only stories can tell them. And I think that's true, too. And I think that's why we have stories. That's why we have the Bible. That's why we have all kinds of things. And so I invite people to think about stories as well. What do they do well? What do they do poorly? What's the difference? What's the art of that and that really helps? Now, we live in a time, and this is my other point, we live in a time when everybody can tell stories. Everybody can participate in stories. And a big part of stories is loving that character or hating that character and taking sides. And in our digital age, this has become extraordinarily easy. And with algorithmically driven interest, which Twitter does well and Facebook does extremely well, it plays on what's called homophily. Homophily is the tendency we have to group with others of our kind, whatever that kind happens to be. It may be like Knicks fans. It may be an ethnic group. It may be a political party. It may be a sympathy of one kind or another. It could be anything. But what's happened is not so much that this is a time in which it's almost too easy to take sides and to not appreciate what the other side brings to the conversational table, or could if there was a conversation. By the way, there's no such thing as a national debate. Never happened. It's bullshit. But let's not go into that. But we are extraordinarily vulnerable to people who are exceptionally good at taking advantage of the tendency that the media have, the major media have, to tell stories. And nobody on earth is better at this, nobody, than Donald Trump. And I say that with a kind of weird and grudging respect. I think he is in the position he is because we're in a digital age. I think he would not be where he is right now if this were 1997 or if this were 1959. He would be ridiculous. But he's not now because he is gifted at story, at not so much telling stories, not that. He's gifted at being a character. You can't ignore him. You just can't. I mean, it's very, very hard. He makes it very hard. And he makes it hard by being a strong character, acting in character, and being a shit disturber. He is a creator of conflict. Conflict is what he is about. He will do that full time. He loves it. And he knows how it works. And he's even, I mean, what a smart and weird and terrible thing it was for him to attack the media itself. You know, he benefits from fake news by Macedonian teenagers who come up with a headline that says Pope endorses Trump. That's real fake news. That really happened. There's a big Wired story about it. Look it up. Veles, the town of Veles, and Macedonian teens, and Pope endorses Trump. That helped get that dude elected, okay? And it was because these teens did it because it made them money. It's very easy to do. You just create a whole bunch of websites that point to each other, drive up page rank, say things that are going to get people excited, run advertising, and make money on the advertising. That's the game. They played the game, played it really well, played Google for a sucker. You can't help doing that. Google has no way to stop it, really. It's another argument we can have if you think that they can. I think as long as their algorithm works doing what it does, it's very hard for them to do. It's a leopard changing its spots to stripes. Too hard. But my point is about storytelling and the way that Trump has taken unusual, extraordinary advantage of his gift for driving the telling of stories, stories about him, stories about anything. Scott Adams, who is one of the great geniuses of our time, he created the Dilbert cartoon, which is a massive insight about business for which there is no equal in human history. He is also, as he pointed out himself, as much a narcissist as Trump is. He's very full of his own ass. I got tired of reading that he's a trained hypnotist and all this shit. But he's right that Trump has a gift. And if you can suffer reading his stuff and his videos, which are not as funny as his cartoons, go for it. He's got insights. But my point here, though, is not about his insights. My insight about this is that, and it's not my own, it comes from other people as well, that Trump in our is a creature of our digital age. Without social media, we wouldn't have him. We wouldn't have a lot of other things as well, including the emotional and political divisions we have right now. And I mean, where the major media used to just do the horse race, and then the boxing ring, those are their favorite two metaphors. War and sports metaphors are too easy for writing stories. They're just like a reporter sits there with a box of those metaphors laying right next to them and pick them up and use them because it's too easy. But think about this. Think about character, problem, and movement. And how creating character, manipulating character, manipulating movement, being able, this is a key thing that, by the way, I meant to say about what Scott Adams said, which is, he wrote this book called Win Bigly, How to Succeed, How to Win When Facts Don't Matter. Trump has proven that in many ways facts don't matter at all. I, as a reporter, as a part-time academic, as just somebody who cares about truth and facts, I think nothing matters more than knowing what's actually going on, knowing what's real. I gave my one and only TED Talk a year ago, September, about that. I think it's had 45 views, something like that. It's not my best, and I'm not going to do another one because you have to memorize and... It was an ordeal for me to memorize that, and I was not quite myself in the sense that I spoke much more slowly than I usually do. But my point, I think, is when I would withdraw at all, it was an important one that, like, it's very, very hard to lie when you're in the physical world. In the digital world, you can lie a lot. In the physical world, it's a lot harder, especially when it's local. If there's a mudslide in your town, you can't do much fake news about that. You can't do fake news about the car accident that just happened. You can't do fake news about who's sick, who won the game, any of that stuff locally. And that's because there's this place where the digital world and the physical world meet, and they meet best at the local level. And that's, I think, where we're going to model the way stories really ought to be told. And I just wanted to share that. My thoughts are not complete about this, by the way. They're more developed than they are in a lot of other topics, but I'm inviting people to think out loud. I mean, to think about this. Think about how stories work. Don't think about Trump politically. Look at how gifted he is as a character, and driving stories, even to the extent that he attacks the other storytellers. You know, calling CNN and MSNBC fake news or anything that disagrees with them fake news was an incredibly brilliant move. It was misdirection of the highest order. It's what you see in a basket. You know, in basketball, they talk about being able to sell a move. I just listened to one of Bill Simmons' podcasts, his Book of Basketball podcast, and his guest made the point that when LeBron James blocked Andre Iguodala's shot at the end of a game in the finals when Cleveland beat Golden State and broke the hearts of the Bay Area and countless fans, but won the hearts of they already had of Cleveland. He actually went up to the basket with hands on both sides of the basket because he wasn't sure exactly what Andre Iguodala was going to do, and he wanted to be able to block it on both sides. It was quite likely his left hand touched the rim, meaning it would have been a goaltend had that been called. It wasn't called. It was a clean block, and everybody considered it a clean block. But the story changes when you find that out. When you find out, you know what, he actually may have done a goaltend there. But it was such an unbelievably brilliant move. It was one of the greatest moves in the history of basketball, that he came up the length of the floor, and Andre Iguodala was busy, trying to get around. I guess it was J.R. Reed was blocking the basket and wanting to foul him because Andre Iguodala had missed most of his foul shots in that game. He was not a confident foul shooter, and wanted to foul him so he would miss a shot. And instead, LeBron blocks the shot clean. And more than anything else, that one move ended the game. But those are all stories. And we could tell that story lots of different ways. And what actually happened is widely open to interpretation. The outcome was not, you know, Cleveland won the game. But I wrote a piece. I'll have to send you this, Dave. I actually wrote a blog post predicting that Cleveland would win that game because it was the better story than Golden State dominating the entire league through 72 or 73 or however many games they won. The better story was that Cleveland would win. And I felt in my gut that that's how it was going to come out, even though I was kind of more of a Golden State fan. I felt the same way about the Patriots when the Patriots played the Giants, although I grew up as a Giants fan. And the Patriots were undefeated. They had possibly the best football team ever assembled. But they faltered. They wore out, and the Giants played a great defensive game and won the game at the end. And Eli Manning, one of the, you know, least skilled, successful, you know, ring-winning quarterbacks in the history of the game, beat Tom Brady, who was the greatest of all time, in that game. But it was a better story. And The Onion had a great headline after that, which is, New England loss, big win for rest of country. And that was perfect. That was a perfect headline. And it was true. It was absolutely true. And even though I really wanted New England to win that one, but I didn't feel bad that the Giants did. And that story again, you know, stories are emotional and they speak to our emotions and we're emotional animals. And what does this have to do with journalism? I'm not sure journalism can get past the story. But I think it can get more honest if it's conscious of the imperatives of telling a story. And I think story theory and it ought to be taught in journalism schools. I'm surprised it's not. I've tried to bring it up. Nobody wants to talk about it, honestly. It's so taken for granted. It's like, you know, let's look at nouns and verbs. Well, we all write with nouns and verbs, so what? But story is really deep. So headlines and stories, that compresses this one. It's almost 25 minutes too much. So I'll call it a night right there.